Did you guys catch? I think I posted it last night that the Snowden guy, that there's UFOs included in his whistleblowing.
But yeah, well, what website was reporting that?
I read it. I read the article, and the person who put it up was Charles Shaw, who, for the most part, I haven't come across anything that he's put out there that I didn't cross reference that turned out to be legit. I mean, it could be bogus, but I don't think it is. I mean, basically, that it's UFOs. He's not saying they're not, like, it's still vague. I mean, it's still Vega, but it's not. It's just, you know, it's open. But I like the idea of, like, I was just thinking, like, obviously, like, he's snowed in, but he's like snowed in, and then Misery came to mind. Stephen King's Misery. I don't know where I'm going with that.
I mean, I was actually, it's really funny you said that, because that's where I was thinking. I was thinking of Wendy and Danny sort of like having to barricade themselves in. I'm still looking at this picture of Jack. So, but it's the idea of like being snowed in, or now he has to like barricade himself, you know, while he's being hunted. It's just the idea of being snowed in was very much present in my mind, but to take it to, I don't know, my mind is sort of spinning right now, but there's something about you know, that you could compare who are our famous whistleblowers at this point. You also have Julian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Julian Assange.
Yes. What is the name Julian? I don't know if I'm making sense. I'm sort of my mind is spinning as I'm talking. I shouldn't be thinking out loud.
You can take it. Could take it to Jules from Pulp Fiction and how he's got the case, the 666 Beast case, which ties in with Poltergeist Beast, I guess. I don't know. I like that. Like, I'm looking at Twister on IMDb, and like, it's like people who like this also like Flight of the Phoenix. And then last night I was reading the Subliminal Synchrosphere, which was all focused on the Phoenix. So it's kind of funny. Twister to Phoenix. Really easy jump.
Do you know that Jodie Foster was in some other movie in the last few years that was called, I don't know, it might just be called Flight or something. And it's all about she's on this plane and like her daughter goes missing.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, she's on a plane and her daughter goes missing and they try to convince her that she never had a daughter, I think.
Right.
It's pretty good.
But this, to me, also ties into 9/11, because you have not only Jodie Foster on a plane, now she's – the Stargate goer is now on a plane, but there was the whole thing with 9/11 was the – a lot of the conspiracy angle of that either the plane took off, landed, and they let the people out, or that, like, where did these passengers go? Are you guys familiar with these theories?
A movie called Flight Plan, too.
Yeah, that's the one he's talking about, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
A flight plan? Okay.
So there's either the idea that, like, you know, these are a fake passenger list or, you know, things like that. But there's a theory that, like, the planes basically took off, landed, went to some, like, government hangar. The people were taken off. Are you guys familiar with this at all?
Yeah, and then you have your missile planes finishing the job, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, or like,
whatever,
yeah,
your antimatter right. machine or whatever right. it is, but the people never died. That's
or they were. I mean, I've seen the theory that not that the people didn't die, but that they were like supposed to be in on it, but then were probably done off. You know, just like any good mafia hit, you use the people and then go, "Hey, great job! Come into this room for your."
Oh Jesus.
You know, your Joe Pesci treatment.
oh God, I hope they didn't go Joe Pesci on him.
But, well, I mean, is that any worse than flying a fucking plane into you?
Well, maybe a little strong Kool-Aid and, you know, nap time is a little nicer.
But I guess where I was really just trying to go with this was the sink of Jodie Foster, who's been tied into 9/11 through all this stuff, and then the idea of, like, someone going missing on the plane, and then they're telling her she was never on the plane. Mm. To me, this is very indicative of the 9/11 swirling mythos, is what I was trying to get at.
Yeah. I watched Panic Room quite a while ago, and I was contemplating its subtext as, like, pan, that, like, basically, like, I keep looking at your image change here.
Pan in the room? Pans in the house.
Right. Well, there was, like, the pan, literally the all, and that she's, like, cornered in this little part of the all, and, like, I don't know, it was interesting. I don't know. I mean, panic comes from pan. I mean, I was like Alejandro Jodorowsky's original film company was called Panic Films or something like that. I like that. But I'm looking through her list right here, and I forgot she was in that Roman Polanski film called Carnage.
Did really? You
guys? I don't know that one.
It's I don't know that either.
Film or. At least one of his latest, because it came out in 2011. It was really fucking good. It's just, the whole thing is basically just one conversation, but it's a good conversation. It's people getting really pissed at each other and over their kids. Their kids get in a fight, and they show up to, like, kind of, like, make, be sophisticated with the parents and be, like, have it together more than their children, and then they end up having a huge breakdown and Jodie Foster.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, okay. I know exactly what you're talking about. I haven't seen it, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
guy can't get off his cell phone, and then it was good. But he explains to them that it's the god of carnage. Who's the god of carnage? What was he like? What god was that? I can't remember who he was referring to. God, see, this is why we should have had Jason Burr on here. There would be no hesitation. He'd be like, or maybe just says, I believe in a god of carnage. I don't know if he says what it is. God of carnage, Wikipedia.
I don't know of a god of carnage.
I don't know what he said. I saw it when it came out, but whatever, anyways. Oh boy.
There is, if you want to go, there's,
James Gandolfini was in a play, God of Carnage.
Mm. And again,
based on that, I think
Tony nominated James Gandolfini in God of Carnage.
This is actually, then they made the Broadway production with Jeff Daniels and Hope Davis. What the fuck? I think this has got to be the same one. Yeah, Roman Polanski directed the 2011 film adaptation of God of Carnage, whose title was shortened to Carnage.
Yeah. Okay.
Same thing. Interesting. Huh. Well, what do you know?
What do you know? So, Gandolfini just died recently, right?
Sorry, I have to say this really quickly. Date premiered of God of Carnage was 8th of December. Which is the conception, the day John Lennon was shot, the day that Magical Mystery Tour and Their Majesty's Satanic Request were released on the same day and year of December 8th. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, so Gandolfini, we talked about the Joe Pesci treatment. Gandolfini, obviously, from Sopranos and all that, but did anyone follow the story of apparently he was, like, there was an internet meme that he died the day before he actually died?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw that in the Facebook group. I don't know if
it was true or not.
I believe that was Peg Carter, was like, when people said something, then she was like, well, what's even more amazing is that he was reported dead the day before.
This happens a lot. This is these WikiLeaks of people dying before they die.
Right, like at first it was like some joke, you know, like you get the, you know, whatever it is, like Eddie Murphy's dead or...
Yeah, or the New Kids on the Block are dead or something to get all the people fucking furious or upset.
The Backstreet Boys died, I know that because I saw it in This Is the End. They show up at the end and do the Backstreet's back in heaven. But everybody died, I guess that was the point, right? And then they were yeah, that was an apocalypse. So. Anyways. That's why that movie was such a positive movie, because the Backstreet Boys died in it. Very positive film.
Any movie where the Backstreet Boys die, it's good with me.
Man. I like the... work that did you guys get a read in the Subliminal Synchrosphere, all the stuff that he worked with Apocalypse Now and Silence of the Lambs with Osiris?
I mean, I read over it, but it's I think I have to like dedicate like a month to reading that website and taking notes. It's overwhelming.
It's posts, like a single post usually takes me an hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Ones like last night I read his newest post in one sitting, and it's long, but it didn't take me much longer than an hour. I think it was around an hour. Very enjoyable, but the like the stuff that I'm like looking at here with Contact and Donnie Darko, like the fact that in Contact when she walks and you see the Washington Monument, the way that they emphasize it in the particular way that they do with the sun, I just couldn't, like, relating that to his posts is just, like, completely mind-blowing. Because that was a point at which it really got to the point with particularly Silence of the Lambs, where I was like, okay, well, that's an interesting way to look at it, to be like, wait a minute. Like, that's, like, totally intentional. And relating it to Apocalypse Now, it's both of them expressing the Osirian rites of, you know, initiation and ritual were like and resurrection were like they're all there. Every component is there. It's really, really incredible. I'm looking forward to when we can have him on here and kind of pick his brain a little bit, because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm also really looking forward to speaking to the guy. I don't like. It's funny because like the Osiris thing has been somewhat of an obsession with me over the last few years, and it's only I have no issue saying out loud that it's become somewhat of an obsession, but the real reason for that, I think, is that I realized that's what I was writing about after writing about it for a long time. It's like, oh, this has been my theme. Like, I might as well just accept that.
Yeah.
But what I've discovered is like it's so all pervasive. Now is that me looking for the symbolism? What do you want to claim that is? But basically, you know, the fact that you can find it, I'm not necessarily convinced that it's always intentional. And at the same time, yes, there are cases. Like I've given the example of another Jodie Foster movie was called, I think it's called Nims Island or something like that.
Or something?
What's that?
A kids movie or something?
It's a kids movie, yeah. It's called Nims Island. I've spoken about it before. I don't think it was on Always Record. But all right, so in Nims Island, right, she I did a blog post. I don't know what it's called, like Second Stargate, I'll find the blog post. But basically, in Nims Island, this little girl, her dad, she like lives on this island with her dad. The dad goes out to, like, on this boat, and then his mast breaks in the storm, mast breaks, so you have like his broken phallus. He's unable to get back. She ends up like befriending these animals on the island while she's living there by herself, one of which is this bird, I think it's a pelican, who she ends up like giving the bird a bag of tools, and the bird brings the tools to the dad on the ship. So here you have Thoth, this aquatic bird, who brings the gifts of science and technology. So he's bringing it back to Osiris. The little girl, even though she's feminine, she's like constantly playing out this Horus thing. At some point, she picks up this like golden telescope and holds it up to her eye. So you have like here with this golden eye and just like all this sort of stuff. But here's where it gets weird. You have this like really kind of explicit Egyptian mythology playing out, and you also have let me just stop this. Did we lose David?
It looks like we might have. Let me ring him up.
Oh, hi. Hey. Skype dropped out.
Cool.
So you have this really explicit Egyptian mythology playing up, but you also have like weird, what I would argue, like a lot of like the conspiracy crowd says, like pedophile angles and like weird sexual exploitation of this child. Like, it just seems really hypersexualized for this little girl, especially considering what she does is she, since she's on this island by herself and her daddy's missing, she goes on the internet and starts talking to this strange man online saying, come to the island and rescue me. Mm-hmm. But it's not really a man. It's Jodie Foster.
Hmm?
It's like fucking bizarre. So like instead of like, oh, I thought it was Jodie Foster, but it's really some old pervert man. It's like, no, I think I'm talking to some old man and saying, I'm all alone. My daddy's not home. Can you come and be with me? But it's really Jodie Foster. And Jodie Foster has to make this trek to get to the girl. And she goes through this whole journey of like going through these planes and doing all this stuff. And what happens is Jodie Foster arrives on this beach at essentially the same time that the father gets back. So you have this reenactment of the end of contact where Jodie Foster... Because like, they keep doing this thing where they're kind of showing that Jodie Foster is the little girl and the little girl is Jodie Foster. Like they're kind of these parallel, they're living these parallel lives. Mm. So
tangent universes.
Right. So when the little girl is reunited with her father on the beach, is it at the same time that Jodie Foster meets the father? So she's essentially Jodie Foster meeting her dad on the beach, a la End of Contact. Mm. It's pretty intense.
You want to overlay them is what you want to do. I need to get some kind of thing worked out where I can do that more easily, because it's absolutely an insane activity, but it's an interesting one. If you
like,
find
to,
film,
if we watched Contact and Nim's Island at the same time,
like, yeah. And this is like, I gotta be careful with how much I do this because it's an absolutely insane activity. But like, I watched The Shining with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with both volumes up. And like, that was fucked up. But interesting nonetheless. I want to watch, like, We Need to Talk About Kevin with Jeff Who Lives at Home. We're following Kevin around everywhere. Like, I don't know. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fucking...
I don't know. So what was this? This island movie was called Nim's Island.
Nim's Island, yeah. Now, you could play with that a whole bunch of ways. Like, someone mentioned... I think this was... I was on this radio show called Grok the Talk. It was this Japanese podcast. And he made the comment, because when I was saying that it has this weird like sexualization of children angle, he mentioned that like Nim could be like Nymphet or, you know, Nympho, the like, you know, this sort of thing. I was also thinking with the weird Egyptian angle, the Egyptian fertility god is Min, M-I-N, and that's just Nim backwards. Either way, I mean, like I said, this movie works on so many levels, and I have like a bunch of screenshots, and I was going to do some massive post on it, and it just never happened because I was like, no one's ever going to watch this movie. But maybe now if I can generate enough interest, maybe.
How did you stumble into Nim's Island again?
If I remember correctly, my wife was babysitting for some girl, and the little girl said, oh, you should watch this movie, and like lent it to her.
There's explicit Egyptian mythology in it, Alan.
Right. So like basically she brings this thing home, and she goes, I don't know if you're going to really want to watch this. Was that... Yeah, that's what I think. Okay, so it was someone. It was a girl that she teaches dance to, or I guess taught when we lived in New York. So the little girl had lent her this, saying like, you know, like, oh, I really like this movie. You should watch it. And Melissa brought it home and was like, I don't know if you really want to watch this, but this little girl lent it to me, and I was like, hey, it's got Jodie Foster in it. Sure, let's watch it. And it was pretty. Like, I'm sitting there, my mind is just blown.
I like that Jodie Foster is in this film, Little Man Tate, as the mother, whose obviously last name is Tate, and then she's in Roman Polanski's Carnage.
Oh, Jesus.
Get it? Oh, gross. Yeah.
I don't know. This is a little thing I came across.
That's...
I mean, for me, the Jodie Foster thing goes so deep because... you know, Jason's done a lot of work with Taxi Driver and her role in that, which adds to the whole Nim's Island weirdness. If this little girl is kind of playing out Jodie Foster's life, you have Jodie Foster starting off as, like, what is she, 12 or 14 years old prostitute in Taxi Driver, right?
She's a prostitute also in Shadows and Fog.
And then you have Jodie Foster's connection to the Reagan shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you have.
Hey, he did it for Jodie Foster. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So and what? So that's Hinckley, who also is connected to The Catcher in the Rye. Was also one of. So like you have this thing of, Catcher in the Rye being present for the Lenin shooting. You're speaking of December 8th, the Hinckley shoot, the Reagan shooting, which is connected to Jodie Foster, and what's amazing to me that like. No one else has made this connection, but there was a lesser known assassination attempt of this actress. Some guy tried to shoot this like not as famous actress, also using The Catcher in the Rye as a prop in it. And his last name is Bardo, which of course makes me think of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, right? So,
right.
It's just. The whole fucking thing, man, is like you know, these are the things that make you, you know, what was that song? Things that make you go, hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when the sinks get so deep, you're like, no one planned this. And then this whole connection, like Jodie Foster is, you know, playing out this role of mind control. I don't, you know, as mind-controlled assassins, and here she is in Silence of the Lambs working for the FBI, and I don't think Jodie Foster's in on anything. I'm just saying, hold on a second. Where are you? No. Sorry.
I'm trying to look
Tate,
up.
You're saying Tate was the first film she directed. Are you saying Jodie Foster directed that movie?
Yeah, that was. I remember when that came out. It was Jodie Foster is gonna direct her first film, My Little Man Tate. And I remember falling asleep at. I don't even know why I went to see that movie. I was probably like 14, but that's what you do when you're bored and you're 14, and so you go see this movie. And it was boring. I fell asleep at it. But that connection is pretty ridiculous.
Huh.
That, you know, Sharon Tate's little man never saw the light of day, and it's...
All right, here's what's even weirder. The whole time I've been staring at this image of Jack bursting through the door frame of the Twin Towers, I've been sitting here seriously considering putting a swastika tattoo on his forehead like Charles Manson.
Oh, no, careful.
Yeah.
No, well, no, I'm just not like... That's why I didn't want to do it.
Because the Tibetan Book of the Dead? Was that what you were going to say?
No. Because of the Tate murders.
Oh, yeah.
right? It was fucking through the Manson family. But I don't know why I've never – I can't – but if for some reason I can't look at Jack's face right now without picturing Charles Manson. Though for the last 20, 30 minutes, I've been looking at this picture thinking this motherfucker is making me think of Charles Manson. And now here we are with Little Man Tate.
Here's something interesting. Jodie Foster's name is Ellie Arroway, right, in Contact.
Mm-hmm.
So just out of curiosity, I just look up the meaning of Ellie, and it's sun ray or shining light, which is interesting in and of itself to have, you know, shining light. Can't help me think of, you know. But then it's shining. Also, what was I? Okay, so I was also looking at Helena. Where did I just see Helena? Shit. Something just happened. Oh, she plays Helena in The Blood of Others in 1984, which is another, like, it's, in other words, her name in Contact is a derivative of the name that she has in this film called The Blood of Others, which is also obviously Helena Blavatsky, who did The Secret Doctrine and connects us to Oz, which is interesting that in Contact it's this way to Oz. But it's kind of spooky that it's called The Blood of Others. Because if it was just Helena in any other movie, I would have thought it was interesting in the first place. But anyway.
So we drove up to New York this week just for a few days and just came back. And what was really interesting to me is I had to pass – so just north of where I am, I had to pass through – first I passed an area called Mars Hill and then passed an area called Jupiter. Then an area called Bowman, and then an area. Then there was a big exit for Eastern Star Drive, and I was like, "We have to go here one day. Like, I want to know what's on Eastern Star Drive." But it was like all within a pretty close proximity to one another. I would say within about a 30-minute drive, all these things: Mars Hill, Jupiter, Bowman. Eastern Star Drive. And then as I'm thinking all this, this bus drives by. The bus company was called Bailey Coaches or something, or Bailey Tours, and it's covered in stars, and I can't think of Alice Bailey, so.
Uh-huh, totally. She's in a film called Echoes of Summer, which can't help but remind me of Pink Floyd Echoes, going with Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite. It's a simple fact that in Taxi Driver, she's Iris, which isn't Iris literally rainbow? I mean, Iris is the
goddess,
eye.
Goddess of the rainbow, yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting then that it centers around the her mission is represented with this compass that is a rainbow compass tying in with everything else we were saying. Kind of interesting.
Going over the rainbow, across the rainbow bridge, back to Theos. To be in,
yeah.
How do you go from Alicia Christian Foster to Jodie?
Her name was Alicia.
Yeah.
Alice. Huh. That's interesting. And then also, that was one of the cool things in the subliminal synchrospheres, and he acknowledges the Alice part of the. CERN.
Are you saying Jodie Foster's father's name is Lucius? Like Lucius Truss?
Yes, it's Lucius.
Really?
Lucius Fisher Foster III.
Ooh, Fisher even. Damn. And, wow, okay.
The third, because that name's so good we had to do it three times. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Huh. Was I just, oh man, so many things to keep track of. I like that. It's his name is Lucius Fisher Foster. Is that?
Yep, yep.
Okay. She's in a film in 1989. That's a short video, I guess, called Rabbit Ears, The Fisherman and His Wife. It's kind of, I like it because obviously Donnie Darko relating. It's kind of fun. Huh. Wow, it's fun to just like go through people's film lists and just kind of like scroll through and see what they've been up to, how they relate.
Yeah, I mean, I Jodie Foster is a thing that I kind of keep coming back to every now and then. I'm glad you guys are enjoying this because it's a really potent little thread. And like there's the thing like she's in Anna and the King. She's in a movie which I believe is just called The Ring. If I remember, she's in a movie called Inside Job, which of course makes me think of 9/11. And for in sure. the whole point of Inside Job is they're trying to get this ring. So you have in Contact, she has to pass through the spinning rings.
So it's not called Inside Man.
Oh, Inside Man, Inside whatever.
Job Man. Yeah. Well, Job was a man, so we got
Job
that.
Was a man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if anything, it just further brings about the idea that the inside job is an inside job.
Uh huh.
You know that this is internal inside of us, not just on the world stage.
Well, yeah, so that was the thing that I was like, you know, Donnie Darko, just on a, like, a, if you're looking at the subtext that's going on in the film, which is just, like, really overt, there's, like, the scene in which they're in, like, a PTA meeting, and it's just, like, extreme, like, the their teacher, Miss Rose. So Rose is the one who's like getting Sparkle Motion together. Like she's the coach of Sparkle Motion, which is the girls' performance art crew, right? And she's getting all like super fanatical about the book that they're being read, which is basically like, you know, I mean, they used to read Catcher in the Rye in schools. And they had this whole thing because of incidents involving Catcher in the Rye that kids can't read Catcher in the Rye, right? Because it could inspire them to kill people or something. And so there's this book in Donnie Darko that they don't want, that the woman Rose is telling that she doesn't want the kids to read because she believes that it inspired the flooding of the school. And she's all freaking out about it. And they go between her freaking out about this coincidence, right? Possible coincidence or possible synchronicity, coincidence with meaning, and Donnie Darko looking at his reflection in the mirror. And I think it's even then when he's stabbing the right eye of, which I guess would be the left eye, I'm getting confused because it's in a mirror, of Frank. And so he's all interacting with his, his mirror representation of his, you know, the dark side of, or I guess the bright side of Darko, or however you want to look at it. But it's interesting the way that they represent it, because you can see she's getting more and more freaked out about this synchronicity, and then he's like facing his own reflection. Like, it's hard to explain, but if you watch it, you can see that there's something, what the deeper thing that's being communicated is like the fear that comes up in people around enough coincidence, like around synchronicity. Like that's the whole
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah. What about the fact that if Donnie Darko came out around 9/11 and then of course 9/11, we can't disassociate whether or not it actually was involved or not, Osama bin Laden, right? Which, just for shits and giggles, I'll point that Jason Barrera, one day me and Jason Barrera having this conversation, and he says, did you realize that Osama bin Laden's CIA codename, Tim Osman, is incredibly close to Tin Woodsman? And I was like, and he's like, I don't know what that means, but that seems really close to me. And, well, yeah, exactly. He's the Ozman, exactly. This has been gone through over and over again. We don't have to rehash it all, but just to say, so here we have the Tin Woodsman, the man with the axe, connected to 9/11. You have Donnie Darko with the axe. 9/11 is released around 9/11, and then that Frank gets one of his eyes stabbed out, or shot out. That's what happens to Bin Laden in the official story of this Navy SEAL raid, they end up shooting out one of his eyes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's the Osiris thing, right? Well, what Osiris has a whole thing with...
Right, oh, with the, like they call it the Wedjat, where it's actually like this Eye of Horus or Eye of Ra, like, that it's actually been plucked out, or that it gets taken out during the battle with Set.
Yes.
There's different variations on it, but yeah.
Right, which is our Jack Sparrow, right? That's like the he's been connected by, I think, Steve Wilner with the Osiris thing in that regard. So that's interesting.
And just the idea that in Donnie Darko, the fact that Frank is a rabbit, and you mentioned rabbit ears, you realize the whole idea of contact. She works at a satellite, you know, like a transmission receiving space. What we used to call on old TVs, we used to call the antennas rabbit ears.
Ooh, nice one. And okay, David Lynch's Rabbits in Purgatory, that's good too. And oh fuck, because it's like this sitcom and the time when we used to watch those guys. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh no, just it's like it's so perfect. Like the serious connection with Donnie Darko of that you have a rabbit and a dog, which Kevin Halcott has gone into the idea that you know, obviously the constellation of Sirius. Or Canis Major is chasing the constellation of the rabbit into the underworld.
Yeah, with Osiris is actually Orion, right? So they're yeah. So you have the hunter along with, and so that was the other thing with Charlie's Theron. Literally, Theron means hunter. It's not the same word, obviously, as Megatheron. But it's interesting then that she would be in Snow White and the Huntsman. Who's basically your woodsman guy. But this all brings up for me Joe Alexander's whole deal with Roger Rabbit in Back to the Future, because they reference Back to the Future directly in Donnie Darko, and he says, I love that movie, it's so futuristic, which is so ironic then that he says it's futuristic. Even though he actually makes a reference to something being ironic, I think shortly before that in the classroom in the movie about the fire is what he refers to. Them burning the money, which reminds me of Heath Ledger in Batman, but he says that it's ironic. But that Roger Rabbit appears in the window in Back to the Future 2 next to Gray's Almanac, which is the artifact, right? So we're looking at Donnie Darko as an artifact that's been removed from its tangent universe, right? So like in Back to the Future, what is the artifact but the Gray's Almanac? Next to the Gray's Almanac is Roger Rabbit. But then it's interesting that the man in, I think it's the first Back to the Future that tells him about the clock tower being struck by the lightning flash is the man who does the voice for Roger Rabbit.
Really?
Yeah. So
Say that part again?
The guy who tells Marty McFly.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Our Fox 666 that the lightning flash hit the clock tower and tells him the whole deal. That guy... It does the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Right, right, right.
So then we have, obviously, the rabbit in that way through, you know, I mean, it would be one thing if it was just Roger Rabbit in the window, because you're like, oh, okay, they threw a thing in there. But then it's like, no, do you get it? Like, it's like, no, rabbit hole, time travel, dig it, you know?
Just to go on with the idea, you were saying ironic. One of the notes that I saw in this Wizard of Oz thing was it says, where she meets a man made entirely of tin. The note here says, tin is not subject to rust and, in fact, resists corrosion. This other author who examined it reports that Russian versions of the novel describe the woodsman as made of iron.
Ooh, do you know who did the Russian version?
Who?
Fucking Vladimir, Vladimir Nabokov, the guy who did Lolita.
Yeah. Really?
So, yeah, he did the Russian translation of Alice in Wonderland.
No, we're talking about Wizard of Oz.
Oh, shit, I'm flipping around.
Yeah, same thing, yeah.
I'm talking about rap.
So instead of being a tin man, he's Iron Man. But, so, how ironic.
Yeah. Why did Robert Downey Jr. just come up in another film that he had? Oh, yeah, he was in After Hours, which Jason Barrera was just referencing. I think he was, or he was in something else I saw that he had a smaller part in. Oh, no, In Dreams. I looked up In Dreams within probably the same half hour with Annette Bening because of somebody was bringing up some weird poltergeist stuff, and I was trying to... Okay, anyways. A lot of shit to keep track of, guys. But I love, like, Rabbit Ear. She's in, okay, Jodie Foster in Rabbit Ears, the fisherman and his wife, and that, you know, the whole deal with Jesus being the fisherman associated with Lepus, the rabbit, having to do with Easter, right? Like, the resurrection. We're literally talking about resurrection, which is Osiris, and the Rabbit Ears connecting the television set to the fisherman. And then obviously the wife is supposed to be Mary Magdalene, right? If you're talking about who is Jesus's wife, right?
And she used to be a nun.
Right. And like, I don't know, I'm tripping out on the fact that it's like, okay, death card in the first place with the two towers in front of the water. It's just like Manhattan, right? It's just an interesting thing that you have Grandma Death here walking back and forth in an infinite recursion in front of a mailbox waiting for this letter. And the letter that she receives is literally not from the artifact, but from the one who brings the artifact through to the other side. There seems to be like, that's like pretty pegged symbolism there.
Well, what about if you're going with the Osiris myth, what about the fact that she's constantly, she's this old Grandma Death, this old Lady Isis high priestess that's just waiting for the mail, and it's M-A-I-L or M-A-L-E. She's waiting for the missing mail piece.
Nice. Yeah, it's like Juno with the empty chair of her husband, right? It's like...
Yeah, which Isis has, in Egyptian hieroglyphs, has the empty throne of Osiris pictured on her head. I believe her name... this was something we came up recently. Jason pointed out that her name might actually mean throne, or her hieroglyph means throne, but it's the empty throne of her dead husband. So this is why when we did the, Clint Eastwood does this whole thing where he's speaking to the empty chair as Obama. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
So you have the empty chair that he's talking to.
Oh, wow.
This is the empty throne of Osiris. That's literally what the symbol was. It's like this empty chair was the symbol of Osiris. So you have on one level this Obama-Osama connection where he's talking to the dead Osiris. But I'm going to throw something out that I thought of the other day. The idea of I was sort of thinking of all these different things from JFK through Osama bin Laden through the context of a quantum reality. And I realized that the Cold War, what is the fear of the Cold War? Is that everyone's waiting for the atomic bomb to drop, right? So you're familiar with the concept of Schrodinger's cat, that you have a timed radiation, like you're just waiting at some point, the radiation is going to fall and kill. So you have the Cold War is literally... Everyone's waiting. Is it gonna? When is the radiation gonna come? It's this like just waiting for the shoe to drop of this timed radiation death. With 9/11, I've pointed out that 9/11, the Twin Towers are the double slit experiment.
Ooh, that's good.
That is good.
Yeah. I have a bunch of material on that. Like it is pretty fucking explicit. So it's like it's the Stargate, but like you said, when you're looking through the mirror, you see what you want to see, and that it basically is the idea of the double slit experiment, right? So you have these two monoliths that you can travel through, but do you want to travel through as a wave, as a particle? Do you want to see it as a conspiracy or a Stargate of higher consciousness? What do you want to see? But then you have the fact that Osama. Right, Osama means lion, so he is Schrodinger's cat. And what is the question about Osama?
Oh, jeez, is he alive or is he dead?
Is he dead? Is he alive or is he dead? Exactly.
Jesus.
Whoa.
So, but we don't have the body. We don't have the proof. We, you know, it's just, it remains a quantum mystery.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's top notch.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I'm processing everything. I was thinking of Frank's right eye in the mirror, and then thinking about that's the left brain, but because it's in a mirror, everything could be flipped or whatever. And then that the in the Matrix when he says when Morpheus is just saying, "Do you want to stay in Wonderland or see how far down the rabbit hole goes or whatever?" And he's showing you the two pills, and you see the pills in his eyes. I was just connecting that whole scene with Donnie in the mirror with the rabbit, with Morpheus talking about, you want to see how far down the rabbit hole goes, connecting to his eyes being red and white, being right and left brain, connecting that to the Ujjat.
David, you know what I just realized? I've never considered this. In Kabbalah or Masonry or whatever, the twin towers are the twin pillars, and they are red and blue.
Yes.
He's offering you a pill. A red and blue pill is the same thing as a red and blue pillar.
Ooh, nice. And then they literally mean, Joaquin and Boaz literally means established in Oz. It's established in strength, which is your lion.
Jesus.
And which is Oz.
Now, I don't know my Matrix backwards and forwards. The pill that Neo chooses is what color?
Red.
Red. So, and the number one prescription pill in all of the world is?
Blue.
Blue.
Viagra, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Mm. What, and now, what is Viagra? So Viagra is how you get Osiris's phallus back.
His
is by taking
phallus.
The blue pill, right?
Oh snap! Oh, and then you know, if it couldn't be any more perfect, they throw in Night of the Lepus in the behind cubes, nonetheless.
Yeah,
it's part of it. It's not just that they're trying to distract you with the cubes. It's that they want you. It seems as though they want you to connect the cube of space with fucking the Lepus rabbit.
What about the fact that Neo, Keanu Reeves, who people should know by now, he was in the band Cold Dog Star, and
yeah.
Right, all this sort of shit. What was he most famous for? But before that was Bill and Ted's, where he actually gets into a cuboid time machine and goes through a wormhole.
Ooh!
And isn't that just a pre-cognitive understanding of the internet? I mean, what year did Bill and Ted's come out? Oh. Like 93, 92?
Dude, that's the fucking...
It's dial-up internet service, whatever.
Yeah.
That's perfect. And Poltergeist 2, the other side, Carol Ann, who's, you know, part of this whole... I mean, this is a huge thing of the actress dying with the Super Bowl and all this crazy shit. She's talking to her dead grandma on the telephone on the other side. Which is, we're just over here talking about grandma death, right? Her grandma dies, and then she gets a phone call from her grandma. Like, I can't help but think of Bill and Ted traveling.
Absolutely. To the other side. Right. If you wanted to visit a dead relative, you could go back in time and actually visit the dead relative. You could commune with spirits by going back to when they were alive.
And where do they where do they find the telephone cube?
At the Circle K.
At the Circle K.
Or the double K, which is Osiris. So the K mirrored against itself is a symbol for the arisen Osiris in hieroglyphs. That's your 1111.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean...
Well, I said this before, but the mirrored K is just the Euclidean space that you recognize that you've been in once you travel through the wormhole. Like, once you get perspective outside of the inside of yourself, so that it's just the XYZ axis, right?
Absolutely. And okay. So you can travel on these coordinates. It's the same thing as folding the message from the aliens, as Haddon teaches us. Yeah, that you have to go on all of these dimensions. You can't just be two-dimensional. You have to get onto all your X, Y, and Z, or however you want to phrase that.
Helena Blavatsky, when she first started her career, before she wrote Isis Unveiled, she was meeting with these people who were conjuring spirits and communicating with the dead, right? And she had this whole objection to what they were doing and the way that they were relating to it, because she felt that there was a reality to it, but she didn't think that it was actually these dead spirits, but actually, like, when somebody dies, the way that their the elements get dispersed, that there's like a residue that's left behind that's running in like an infinite recursion. And that what they were witnessing was this recursion of infinity, like a Mobius loop, right? And that that was actually the what's left on a physical plane of the components of the organism. Did you ever hear
that?
Okay,
yeah, okay. Think of it this way. When in the movie Contact, what the aliens receive, when the reason they send us a picture of Hitler is because they're receiving our dead transmission. We broadcasted TV, and that was a live television show, the Olympics, which the Olympics, of course, Olympic rings is what she travels through, is the Olympic rings. But they're showing you Hitler at the Olympics. But what the aliens find is essentially the ghost as you just described it. It is the transmission that these elements are still there floating through space, and you can come back and pick them up. If you lived out in Vega, you would pick up the ghost of this transmission as if it was still valid. And then you're sending your transmission back. Now, you can also picture this along with our double slit experiment. You could picture this if you picture radio waves coming out from Earth and then radio waves coming back from Vega. What do you get but an interference pattern?
Right.
Which is how you measure
in the fabric of space.
In the fabric of space, right. So she has to travel across the interference pattern is the wormhole.
Okay, I like that.
And just to give you one other thing, you know, when you were talking about this telephone stuff, and we spoke earlier about the transmission. Do you get the transmission from the Sirius or from the Holy Guardian Angel or from et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Terrence McKenna, one of my favorite lines from Terrence McKenna is when he says, I wasn't sure if the mushroom was the alien or essentially a telephone that allowed me to communicate with the aliens. So here again, you have Keanu Reeves getting into the telephone booth to communicate with the other side.
Right, and then Superman goes and changes into Superman in telephone booths, which is the Ubermensch
yes.
of Nietzsche, thus begs Zarathustra.
Yes, yes.
Do you need to go, Bill? Is that what's happening?
I kind of do.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can Alan, can we record just a little bit more, or how do you feel about that?
Can I come out and play?
Yeah. I like how in the beginning of Contact, the little girl who is the young Jodie Foster, who is Donnie Darko's girlfriend, is trying to figure out where the person who she's getting the radio transmission to, who she's communicating with, where he's at. And the father says, I'll give you a hint, oranges. And she's all, oh, Florida. I like how he get the hint that he gives her is oranges in relationship to a Clockwork Orange being, you know, the sun that moves like clockwork. The idea of Sirius as a second sun. So, or the sun behind the sun, right?
Or what if the fact that if Jodie Foster's real name is Alicia or Alice, right? The fact that she Alice starts her descent down the rabbit hole with the bottle of orange marmalade.
Ooh, I forgot about that. That's perfect then. Yeah. So she's literally starting her descent as a child down the rabbit hole by getting into this communication. And the whole thing with contact is that she's centered around wanting to contact the dead because she wants to contact her father.
Yes.
She first wants to contact the mother, and then the father says there's no satellite that would be big enough to contact the mother. Cut to her with the biggest satellite in the world in, like, the next scene.
So, yeah, I forgot she was trying to contact the dead. Yeah, that makes total sense. Like, obviously, that's the moral of the story. I forgot that's how it starts. Because what I remember is they show at the beginning of the movie, there's something about where they say something about a transmission around, I forget if they say Jupiter or Saturn.
Well, she's asking about they bring up both Jupiter and Saturn in the first scene of contact. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, Yeah, because it's something like isnn't the opening scene something like you're seeing like a picture of space and you're hearing like radio noises?
Yes, it's like the most. I mean, that was a times 10 video. It's basically what they showed you, and at that point, it was the most advanced one they had ever done since the one that they did in the 70s or whatever. They redid that. I love how when they're backing up in space, they go through one of her eyes, which I think may have been her left eye. But either way, you're like that one eye, you see that they move out of the Ujjat of the girl from Donnie Darko.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
They back up out of the eyeball.
Yeah. And of course, when Dave Bowman goes to the Stargate, there's the focus on his eye.
Yes. And then it turns into, like, it goes from the colored eye to the real eye, right?
Yeah, exactly. The rainbow eye.
Yeah, it's going through the, yeah, exactly. So you have the rainbow eye. You're going literally over the rainbow. Right, and then you go to this thing, but then it's supposed to be real, but then he's still being filmed, and he's tripping out on the, like, he's in relationship to him being an actor in the scene. I mean, there's they let you know that it's not a mistake, that the shots are flipped throughout the film and all these things, with the simple action of the glass being in the middle of the table, and then next cut to him moving his hand, knocking over the glass onto the floor in Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite. And then he looks at it and he stares at the glass and he's like, how did that glass just fall? Because the glass was in the center of the table. So it's showing you that the editing mistake is not a mistake. Meaning that the other editing mistakes are not editing mistakes. He's letting you know that, no, this is purposeful. Which is interesting.
And of course, what does he break? But a chalice, which a chalice is the sacred feminine, it's the moon, it's the same sort of interchangeable symbols. So it's not just like a lost grail, but it's the it's like a repeat of the monolith on the moon, and then finding the monolith.
Right. Which is why he immediately looks up and sees himself on the bed looking at the monolith.
Right.
Because him looking at the glass is him looking at the monolith by extension. It's like they're mirrors.
Oh, you know, I never even thought about it. You know, we've talked about the idea of the elevator from The Shining being like abortion or water breaking or having to do with birth, but I never thought about the broken chalice being essentially like water breaking. If you're going to have a star child, before a star Ooh. Child, you'd have a water break.
Totally. And then it's a water portal, right? It's what they're what they're all communicating. Seems to be the theme.
The Watergate. The Watergate.
Yeah, Watergate. The Watergate is a wow, that's interesting.
I mean, this, like I said, this sort of thing, like the rabbit connection. Now, when Jodie Foster's first talking, is she talking? What do you know? What kind of radio she's on? Is she on a ham radio or is it a CB?
It looks like it's larger than a CB. It's like a big.
Okay.
She has like a whole setup. I mean, it's like a satellite or something. I don't know.
Only because CB is 32.
Ooh. So she would be communicating through the pathways, right?
Correct.
That's the idea.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's why I was wondering. I have to watch it again. Like I've watched that movie a bunch of times and picked up different things, but that's there seems to be a really underutilized resource for this exploration.
Yeah, I was having a whole thing with the terrorist guy who's a technician in Twister, who blows up the thing in Contact. The idea that he has this like long blonde hair reminded me of the archetype of like Hercules. Of they have like Hercules in the summer, like you have this archetypal man who grows out his hair and loses his hair and grows out his hair and loses his hair. That was the way, like I remember Alice Bailey talking about that at one point, where you have this archetypal figure who's like, so you could look at it as what will we do when the summer's gone, you know, that he's like this character that's like,
you want to laugh while you're talking, Google Hercules in New York movie poster.
Oh, it's the two towers with Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
I've seen that before. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. New York. So you see what I'm talking about here? And just in case of, yeah, that's so funny. And they're on his left side, right? Our right side, his left side.
So I don't know. Like all this stuff is, I guess this is a rabbit hole with really no end. But it just feels to me that there's something more being communicated here. One of the things I pointed out in that older blog post. Where I talk about Contact and Nim's Island, I believe it's the same blog post, I point out, or right around there, I don't know, I did a blog post, and I think it's from, if someone wants to find it, it's allthehappycreatures.blogspot.com. I think it was one of my first few posts in 2012. It was called Why So Serious Part 2, maybe? Well, on 9/11, as the towers, like I looked up different astrological alignments for 9/11, Vega is rising over the horizon at the moment. I think it's at the moment the towers fall, or at the moment that the planes hit. One of those. We could actually look at the blog post, but I have that all documented.
Huh.
Oh, you know, this is awesome. This picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger with the bow and arrow.
Yeah, because then you have Bowman and Arrowway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and that is from Hercules in New York, that shot. Kind of weird. I like that the moon returns to the same position relative to a star every 27.3 days.
Yeah, 237.
Yeah, I like that. it's interesting. It just so happens that it's like that to, you know, point whatever, you know, it's like, that's, it's pretty close.
Let's see. Okay, March 2012, the post is Why So Serious Part 2, The Rise of Horus. Here we go.
I read that, by the way. I've read almost all the things that you've done for the last quite a while. It was, yeah, that's interesting. And then, you know, you have the Osiris is over. Orion.
It's actually not. It's the constellation for Horus.
Oh.
And it's an outdated Egyptian constellation for Horus, and that's directly above at the zenith point over New York City, and as the zenith strikes Horus's heart, Vega begins to rise over the horizon. Yeah, Vega is in ascent as the events are playing out.
You see how interesting it is with the beast in Poltergeist being, obviously the beast is 666, and then Vincent Vega holds the fucking briefcase whose combination is 666, that when he opens it, is all you see is light.
Yeah.
And like how, if you think about that, that Carol Ann is communicating with the dead in the same way that Jodie Foster is attempting to communicate with the dead through satellites, Carol Ann is doing it through the static. And then it just so happens that it's the static that the aliens use to communicate in contact.
Well, what is the classic idea of when someone dies, they go through a tunnel, which is a wormhole or Stargate or whatever, and there's the idea of like, heading for the light. So, you know, are you, I guess, as, and this is what the Tibetan Book of the Dead would try and teach you is, you know, don't head for the, don't get trapped in the briefcase, the monolith briefcase. Try and, you know, I don't know. It's
He's like, I can't give you what's in this briefcase. You don't know what we've gone through to get it.
Right.
You know? In Pulp Fiction, so that's kind of I'm having so many things happening at once. There's a film, White Noise, if I'm not mistaken. White Noise, which is about communicating with the dead through static.
Yes,
or something. I haven't seen.
I have never seen it, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
And who's in it? I'm wondering.
I think it's like Michael Keaton, who's Batman, who deals with Jack Nicholson, the Joker.
Oh,
now that's
wow.
If my memory. I mean, all I've ever seen of this was a
starring Michael Keaton.
See, I have a weird memory for shit like that. Movies I've never seen, but I saw probably the coming attractions in the movie theater.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I think I lost the other part of what I was gonna respond with.
Hey, so if Michael J. Fox, at the same time he's in Back to the Future, he's also in Teen Wolf. It comes out like right after.
Right. So you have Teen Wolf. Oh, man. Totally.
Teen Wolf. This brings us back to 42. Sirius. Well, what is the wolf but Sirius, the dog star?
Right.
So he at the same time, he says, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit. And then...
Right.
At the same time, Michael J. Fox is turning into the serious Wolfman, who Jack Nicholson also becomes the Wolfman in the movie Wolf, right?
Ooh, opposite James Spader, who is obviously Spader is death, right? Which connects us to Sirius through the death card. But James Spader is in Secretary.
And Stargate.
Fucking Stargate. I've actually, like, as we've been talking, James Spader has repeatedly come up in my mind for the reason of Stargate. And okay, so
you said Secretary.
Secretary Gyllenhaal, the sister of Jake Gyllenhaal. What's her name?
Maggie
Gyllenhaal is in there with James Spader. But I had a whole, there was a whole thing around there with their the way she runs from the marriage. It's just all the drama surrounding her wanting to get married or whatever to James Spader, but him as the wolf. Like, this was like a year ago or something. I was like, I had watched Secretary, and I was pondering on all these Kabbalistic implications having to do with Za'er and Shakina. But yeah, I don't know if I do it as much justice now. But I don't think it's a beetle that she puts down. It's a cockroach, isn't it? And on the bed at the end. Anyway, if that was a beetle at the end, I would be really excited right now for synchronicity purposes.
Well, no, so where I was going with this is that, we have the whole Batman idea, but so Michael J. Fox is in Teen Wolf in 1985, I believe, and then 1987, 2 years later, they make a sequel, Teen Wolf 2, which stars Jason Bateman. So we have Batman and Bateman, but also you said Bate is the house.
Mm-hmm. Which is the magician.
Right.
Wow. Huh. Teen Wolf 2 wasn't with Michael J. Fox? Or
no,
it was with Michael
no,
J. Fox
no. Michael J. Fox is like, fuck this, now I'm famous from Back to the Future. I'm not going to pretend to be a werewolf anymore.
Oh, they did another Teen Wolf recently, which I'm sure
I was doing some research into Teen Wolf 2. I don't remember why. I was looking into this pretty recently, and then I found out there's a TV show, I think still currently in production or something. Like, they decided to make a weird, like, almost like Twilight-esque, you know, sexy teenagers who turn into werewolves.
You know, okay. So I haven't seen any of this Twilight business, and I have a hard time bringing myself to, even for synchronicity's sake. But I find it interesting that, first of all, like, oh boy, I looked at a bunch of the Subliminal Synchrosphere's interpretation of Twilight Zone, and then I brought myself to watch Twilight Zone, and there was so much sync in there. It was crazy. With Let the Midnight Special Shine a Light on Me with Dan Aykroyd. So you have so it's Dan Aykroyd, and then you have the shining Scatman Crothers helping the elderly people become young. You have 2010, The Year We Make Contact, and Harry and the Hendersons' John Lithgow in there, and at Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, which was originally Captain Kirk, right? It was William Shatner in the original Twilight Zone. But just the connection of, like, looking at, like, okay, well, Planet of the Apes, Twilight Zone, connecting to Twilight, it seems like there could be something to that to kind of play with, but I don't know. it's vampires and werewolves, right? That's the basis of Twilight.
I believe so. I've actually never seen Twilight either, but
yeah, we need to find somebody that's willing to watch these so they can watch Teen Wolf, the television show, and to get back to us.
Well, just from all the only, you know, like the obvious thing here is in Teen Wolf, Michael J. Fox wears the 42 basketball jersey.
Yes. Which is kind of like it has a Hulk quality too, which is your Green Man, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Oh, man. We don't have to keep going with this. I mean, we could keep going forever, but I don't know. I wanted to talk a little bit longer. I don't know. I think maybe I should take a week off more often, because I'll probably have more to come with. Although most of the stuff that I've brought up today has just come up in the last, like, 3 days, actually, so I don't know. It's funny here. So in my notes, I'm going along with Contact, but in the book of notes, like maybe a month and a half ago or something, I had written notes while watching Scott Onstott's secret, what is this video?
Secrets in Plain Sight.
Secrets in Plain Sight, where he's talking about the Golden Gate and the Silver Gate. So he's looking at the Golden Gate Bridge and considering that there's, and which is interesting too, if you think of like Rise of the Planet of the Apes meets, Dark Knight Rises. But that you have, like, the you can be resurrected in the duat, or you can go on to the next level, right? So this in the Egyptian mysticism, they would represent this as the golden and the silver gate, which one represents the sun and one represents the moon, and how if you're, you know, going to contact the dead, you would theoretically be contacting what hasn't passed on, right, to one or the other. You're contacting what is in limbo, or you know, like David Lynch's Rabbits, like it's the purgatory. So I don't know. So the sun's retrograde perpetual motion through the zodiac is represented by the scarab pushing a dung ball backwards. So because the scarab pushes the dung ball backwards, they saw that as a retroactive sun.
Well, which is the all right. So this brings us back to Chris Knowles. This is something he focused on a lot more years back, but it was the idea that basically there was this sort of mystery school that's trying to bring things back to a golden age, right? So that you would see in a lot of stuff, you would see this imagery of turning back time, and it's trying to get back to the golden age of Saturn or Osiris, etc., etc. So he was talking about the idea of like showing things either in reverse or reversing time. And of course, here we are talking about things like Back to the Future and Bill and Ted's and all the time travel, whether or not it's actually like some sort of ceremonial magic or homage from some, you know, mystery school that survived for thousands of years. I don't know if he still holds that sort of position, but it's something that stuck out in my mind. So the idea of rolling the dung ball backwards is like turning back time.
Right.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. This is what it is. It's that Isis is Sirius.
Yes.
Right. So the Virgin is consecrated to Isis, just as Leo is consecrated to her husband Osiris. But Isis is Sirius, which is our moon card, right, with the dog as Sirius. But that is Diana.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So Diana is Artemis, which is your bow woman, basically.
Yes.
So
the arrowway,
bowman, Artemis, Sirius. Like that's. It seems like that's what's being communicated. I mean, if Hollywood is wishing on any star, it seems like they're wishing on Sirius. You know.
Without a doubt. You see, but what's funny though is like, so this is where things get really interesting for me, because without a doubt, there is a reverence for Sirius within Hollywood, within Masonry, and all these things. And at the same time, there's also what I think of as a very legitimate phenomenon that seems to center around Sirius. So it's not like I want to say that validates. You know, just be careful how I say it. It's like not like, oh, because there's a legitimate phenomenon around Sirius, they have reason to worship it. I don't worship Sirius, but I certainly find it way more fascinating than, you know, Beta Reticuli or, you know, something like and again, is it just the symbolism of it? Is there something legitimate of extraterrestrial phenomenon? Is it what the fuck is it? I don't know. But it's funny that you say Hollywood seems to focus on Sirius, because there was a point where I think I might have told you guys this, is that there was a time where I ate a bit too much hash, and I had the truly Gnostic experience, or the classic Gnostic experience of, I needed to step out on my roof because I was kind of like, it was just too much. I need to step outside. And I look up in the sky and I see Sirius. And in this moment, I looked at it and I realized it was the projector. Like that the false illusion reality, the whole reality was a false illusion. and Sirius was the projector. It was like the beginning of 2001: A Space Odyssey or Clockwork Orange, all the things that Kubrick was trying to hint at, perhaps. It seemed to me that that was my experience, because I looked serious and I was like, oh my God, I'm looking at the projector.
Totally. I love it. Have you ever seen a portal? And it's Evil Dead, right? So you're looking at the clock on Evil Dead and Donnie Darko, and it turns into the portal.
Yeah.
The rabbit shows him the rabbit hole, and it's through the clock.
Oh, yeah.
And then also the cellar door, right? Our DB. We got 42 over there telling us about Cellar Door, the teacher, Drew Barrymore, who is the fire starter, incidentally, which seems to connect with the fact that they burned down Patrick Swayze's house, right? And it's supposed to be Donnie who set fire to it, yet he's a reflection of the town. And the teacher is the one showing them the book where they burn the money, which the kind of has a Heath Ledger's Joker quality to burning the pyramid of money, right? And that it's ironic because they burn the money, but that she's Firestarter. What was she, like 5 years old or something? Which is also Stephen King.
Correct, yeah.
I like that she's telling about Cellar Door, and then here you have in Evil Dead. I think it happens in both movies, but don't quote me on that. I know in Evil Dead 2 it happens, where the demons are kept down in the cellar, and they're holding the door shut, like they're keeping the demons at bay and beneath the cellar door. Do you remember that?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But all the creatures in the house throw a laughing fit too. If you'll look in Patrick Swayze's house, you'll see that like he has elks or deer on his wall with roses on both sides. Couldn't help but remind me of that as well.
Oh yeah. But that the deer and elk, is that also portraying him as the huntsman?
Right. Totally. Even better. Yeah. So he's Theron, right? It seems like the Theron thing is like that. It's like a play on.
Oh my God!
Megatheron,
and fucking Patrick Swayze. And fucking Patrick Swayze is Ghost, the guy who comes back from the other side and learns all this in 42nd Street Station.
Oh snap! So good. Oh, and he's the fucking... Okay, I'm not... Is he the guy in Outsiders?
I don't know.
Do you know Outsiders?
Yeah, but I don't know if he's...
We had to watch it in school. Outsiders.
C. Thomas Howell, so. Matt Dillon.
Say fucking Patrick Swayze. It's not that big of a deal if it doesn't, but that would be kind of cool because my whole focus lately has been, like, I was just looking at the page for...
Patrick Swayze, yes, he is.
Yeah, totally. Oh, and Rob Lowe, who was just in Contact. Rob Lowe is the religious guy in Contact.
Is he?
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Right. Yes. Okay. It's funny too because this is even like a Francis Ford Coppola movie, The Outsiders. But I love like the idea of them being the outsiders as the other side. Like I was just looking at White Noise and it's referring it to as the other side, which is what everyone loves to refer to the spirit world as. But the other side is just the side. So it's like, you know, like Alice can't read the Jabberwocky poem until she realizes that I'm in a mirror world. Oh, everything's reversed, you know.
Right, right, right. I forgot. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's right. He's in Contact. And he's also in something else. He was on a TV show. Yes, yes. See? Fucking yes. In
okay, what do you got?
2003, Rob Lowe starred in a TV show called The Lion's Den. Just bring it back to the Lion, Osama, Lion King, fucking you name it, you know.
I have to make sure we're talking about the same person. Rob Lowe is in Wayne's World.
Is he in Wayne's
World? Or am I confused? Who's the fuck is Rob Lowe? Let me look real quick. Rob Lowe. Yes. Yeah. He's Benjamin.
I haven't seen Wayne's World in forever, so.
Okay, that's fine. I was just making sure we're talking about the same person, which we are. And it's interesting that you have, like, St. Elmo's Fire.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm.
But anyway, you could go on and on with all of that. But, yeah. Huh.
Yeah, I just remember, like I said, this is another weird thing. I've never seen this TV show Lion's Den, but the commercial for it stood out for me. When this came out around, this is shortly after 9/11, this is September 2003, this show premiered. And I remember seeing a commercial for it, and it felt significant to me, and I wasn't sure why. This is interesting. 13 episodes were made, but only 6 episodes aired because the show got canceled. So there's your 13.
Tom Cruise is in Outsiders. It's so funny. Who's Jupiter in Mission Impossible. But there you go. More than just that. There's a, yeah.